Talk Central is brought to you by BlackBerry.
Hi, this is Diplo. I'm just out there mixing ideas and mixing up different genres. I can't believe that people are actually paying me to travel across the world and build new sounds, different artists. The BlackBerry Torch makes it simple because I'm always staying in touch with everybody, whether it's using Twitter applications or Facebook. A lot of these guys, I have a closer relationship now because I'm constantly on BBM talking to them. Pop. I love what I do. And a BlackBerry Torch helps me do it.
Welcome to Talk Central, the business technology podcast brought to you by the editors at techcentral.co.za. It's Friday afternoon. My name is Duncan McLeod. I'm here with Tech Central's deputy editor, Candace Jones. Hi, Candace.
Hi, Duncan.
Great. Well, welcome to the show. Red Bull Mobile.
Indeed. Quite exciting news that came out this week. Cell C and international energy drinks business, Red Bull, are joining forces to bring Red Bull Mobile to the country.
Now, a cell phone service being provided by an energy drinks company is not something that logically fits together, is it? Why are they doing it?
Well, it appears that they want to bring some branding or some extra marketing to the country, which they haven't had before. The energy drinks company Red Bull is quite a marketing machine with functions and events across the world in the thousands. It looks like what they want to do is offer a service over Cell C's network, powered by Cell C, most likely billed by Cell C. As a product for South Africans, which is quite exciting.
Yeah, no, this isn't the first time that Red Bull's done this. I mean, they offer this. They've built Red Bull Mobile in Austria, Switzerland, and Hungary. Is it?
That's correct. Yes.
So this is the fourth market they're coming into, and the first outside of Europe.
Yes, indeed. Mm. They're also looking at, I understand, Germany as a possible.
And you mentioned China in your article as well.
Yes, China is also, but China is more of a rumor, and Germany is slightly more solid. In terms of their new product. So it should be exciting. They're looking to offer, or hopefully will offer, content along the lines of their adventure sports and their high-profile music events. Mm. And some of the other interesting events that they do. I know one of my favorites is definitely the Red Bull Air Show, which I understand that they might actually be canning over the next couple of years thanks to an awful accident that almost happened last year.
They don't do that here, they do that overseas.
It's overseas, but there is actually a South African guy that flies in, or used to fly in one of the events, which was quite fun to watch.
Okay.
And that was hair-raising and fun to watch, and I used to watch it religiously, and that would be great to have as a content clip on my mobile or on my tablet. And that's the kind of thing that they're probably going to bring to the market.
The high-end space with smartphones, tablets, that sort of thing, you reckon?
Definitely.
Okay.
Since they're offering both voice and data, it will be an interesting play.
And they'll be using Cell C's new 3G or 4G network. I think they can actually technically call it a 4G network now. Well, I'm wondering if they're actually going to go back to the ASA over that.
I don't know, yes, but it will be fun to see if they do.
Because for those who haven't been following the story closely, the ITU has changed, is in the process, I think, of changing its definitions over what constitutes a fourth generation network, and they're talking about turning or allowing the HSPA Plus or high speed packet access, evolved high speed packet access technologies that Cell C is offering already, and allowing those to be called 4G under their definition. So the ASA had ruled that the service wasn't 4G, but now with these changes by the ASA, we could see the 4G terminology creeping back into the discussion.
Will be interesting, and sort of a vindication for Cell C.
It will be indeed. I'm interested that Red Bull Mobile, or Red Bull, the drinks company, is headquartered in Austria. My understanding is that, I know for a fact that Lars Reichelt, the CEO of Cell C, I think is Austrian or Swiss. I think we're both. So he comes from that part of the world. So I wouldn't be surprised if the genesis of this deal was some sort of discussion that occurred between Lars and executives at Red Bull in Austria.
Quite possibly. Mm. I wouldn't be surprised, and I'm sure that they have some sort of contact, and they've had some sort of contact since he became the CEO of Cell C.
Now, Candace, this is the second MVNO, as they call it, mobile virtual network operator, or operator that piggybacks on another operator's infrastructure. Still services subscribers, but doesn't build its own networks necessarily. We've had one of these in the market for the past 4 or 5 years already in the form of Virgin Mobile.
Yes, we have.
I remember at the time when they launched Virgin Mobile and Virgin Money at the same time. I had an interview with Richard Branson when I was still working for the Financial Mail at the time. And they launched it with huge fanfare. And Richard Branson, we went down to Cape Town to watch him try some record attempt for flying into the stratosphere in some sort of rocket jet or something. Some British fighter jet. It was quite amazing to watch. But they really spent a lot of money and it was a big fanfare. But Virgin Mobile hasn't really been the kind of success that they were hoping for. They were targeting 10% market share and have achieved nothing near that.
No, I think they revised their targets last year to 1% of the market share, which is quite a disappointment, I'm sure, for Virgin Mobile. They really didn't come into the markets with as much vigor as they could have or possibly should have at the time. Mm. Although at the time they did what everybody else was doing globally, and at the time it was a global explosion of these mobile virtual network operators. Mm. So I think they tried the international model, and the international model didn't work for them. And that's what they've done, is they've tried to get people to use minutes off their brand as opposed to Cell C's, which is who they piggyback off as well. Because as you know, Cell C owns 50% of Virgin Mobile South Africa, although not for long.
Not for long. They're busy selling to Allied Mobile, which is a cell phone distributor.
Yes, yes. And it's no longer good enough to just sell people minutes. As BMI Technology MD Dennis Smith says, you have to add value to those minutes and give them something additional. Give them something extra that's exclusive, that's really valuable, that you can take with you.
Mm.
Obviously, a price cut would be fantastic as well. But yeah, the Virgin unfortunately didn't quite crack the model that they needed to for the local market.
Sure. Why do you think Red Bull Mobile will be any more successful, or will they?
Well, it remains to be seen what they're actually going to do. So their actual success depends almost entirely on the product that they put out.
So it depends on what their target is, I suppose.
Exactly.
I mean, if they're not targeting 10% market share, then it's going to be more easy to succeed. I'm sure they're not going to target
10%. I doubt it. I think what they're looking at and what they've mentioned globally in international reports is that if Red Bull targets 3% market share in any given country, that's good.
Mm.
And if they manage to make that, that's good. So 3% of the South African market, I think, is a little bit ambitious. Anything under that is probably well within their target range.
And if they're going for the high end of the market, the sort of LSM 9 and 10 that buys tablet computers and buys smartphones like iPhone 4s and iPads and all that sort of thing, then they don't need to get a big chunk of the market, quite frankly, because they can just get that they can skim cream, if you like, at the top of the market.
Exactly.
And that's where the margins are.
Well, that's exactly it. The higher spenders are at that end of the market, and these are the guys that go, and raise money to go off mountain climbing and white river rafting and that kind of thing. So these are the guys that will definitely take it up.
What really interests me actually about this whole thing is that MTN, it's been Cell C that's attracted both of the MVNO operators. I'm surprised that none of the other operators have attracted, particularly MTN, because MTN has spent a lot of money over the last couple of years investing its network, and they've got a lot of spare capacity there at the moment. Hence their ability, for example, to do their roaming agreement with ATA for Telkom's mobile launch. I would have thought that MTN would also have been out there quite aggressively chasing MVNO partners.
Well, I think that Cell C might have brought with it a very interesting model, because in general, mobile operators are inclined to shy away from MVNOs.
The incumbents are, yeah.
Specifically because they cannibalize revenue. They eat away at whatever market share that the company already has. Mm. And that's, that's not something that everybody is going to be happy with.
Mm.
So what I suspect is that Cell C has redeveloped the model and redeveloped the profit share model.
Yes.
That it will get back what it's giving to the MVNOs that it's supporting at the moment.
Yes. Of course, the sort of view of the MVNO market is that it only really happens in mature markets where you've got 100% penetration, and certainly in the voice space in South Africa, we've reached that 100% penetration mark. Not so much on the data side. I mean, that's still the boom area, but on the mobile voice side, we're a pretty mature market now. So maybe now is the right time to look at a plethora of MVNOs coming into this market. And you've heard speculation. I mean, this moment this is confirmed. But you've heard speculation that an airline might be coming in.
Well, yes, I heard speculation that 2 years ago an airline was interested. And,
oh, just 2 years ago.
And quite possibly is still now.
Okay.
I know that another, I think a retail business has been in negotiation with Cell C for the last 2 years.
A retailer?
Although I can't confirm which one.
Okay.
But again, these agreements take quite a long time to negotiate. So you know, these guys are coming in and they're looking to expand their brand. I mean, what it does now, because of lower prices for voice and data, it becomes a marketing tool.
Mm.
It becomes a tool where you can grab the eyeballs of your particular market who've opted into the space and really just control that. And that's something that marketers across the world are looking at very heavily now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very nice time. As you say, we're a more mature market with a quite high penetration. And that also gives the opportunity.
Mm. Okay. Let's keep a close eye on the MVNO space, but let's move on and talk. But staying in the telecom sector, talk a bit about Neotel, which was all over the place this week after we broke the story about their annual report filing, which showed that Deloitte and Touche had effectively warned over the going concern status of Neotel. I had an exclusive interview with Ajay Pandey, the MD, believed to be the outgoing MD. Our sources say he's probably going to leave the organization by the middle of this year.
Mm.
So I see some other reports have suggested March, but our sources are saying it's more likely to be towards the middle of the year. The numbers not great. Pre-tax losses of around 1.6 billion rand and mounting debt. But on the positive side, top line is growing. Interesting interview with Ajay about Neotel and where it's going. He's putting quite a positive spin on it, saying that they've, you know, even though they missed some earnings targets with their debt providers last year, he feels that they're still broadly on track to meeting their business targets and eventually generating the EBITDA, earnings before interest, tax, depreciation, and amortization. basically a type of operating profit that startups in the telecommunications and other industries use to measure their performance before they've managed to turn a profit and while they're still investing heavily. So they missed their EBITDA targets set by their funders on two or three separate occasions last year. But he says it was a result of the World Cup and the fact that they couldn't invest in infrastructure and deliver to their customers, and also that they couldn't predict the economic downturn. You know, you talk to other telecommunications players and they tend to say to you that Neotel's been a real disappointment in this market and a lot more was expected of them. And I think certainly in the consumer market, people are very unhappy with what Neotel has managed to achieve. I think that Neotel in some ways could never achieve consumer expectations because they were always sort of put up on this pedestal as this savior of consumers to take us away from the horrible telecom monopoly. and they were never really going to be able to do that because they just didn't have the fixed line infrastructure to provide those sort of services. But there is a question mark over Neotel at the moment and where they're going and their strategy and whether they're on the right track. But certainly the annual report and the Deloitte and Touche going concern status warning are reason for concern.
They also drew from several of their facilities that they have available to them, and quite a chunk of money, as far as I can tell.
They have been drawing down cash, but they still have quite a lot of debt available from the bankers, mainly Investec and Nedbank, I think, and DBSA, Development Bank of Southern Africa, is also a funder there, amongst a few others. But I think they still have several billion rand from both shareholders and debt providers available to them. The big question comes when that debt has to be repaid.
Well, I mean, not long after you discovered the annual report, the parent company Tata also did a management shuffle, and I wonder if there's not something to be concerned about there as well.
Well, the speculation is that and who knows? I mean, who knows if this is true? When I spoke to Ajay Pandey, he was playing down a lot of these issues and suggesting a lot of them were just nonsense talk in the market. But the fact is, we know that Neotel is going through a retrenchment process. We know that, Srinath, whose surname I've forgotten, the CEO of Tata Communications, has been reshuffled. He's been moved into a new Tata Communications business. When I spoke to Ajay Pandey, he said to me that it's a major promotion for Srinath because he's moving on to a much larger organization within the Tata group. Other sources I've spoken to in Neotel have suggested that perhaps he was moved on because of the fact that Neotel has been such a disappointment. But then my sources say that Srinath has been spending a lot of time in the South African operation trying to turn it around, working with Ajay on trying to deal with the issues here. And Ajay says to me, that's simply not true. Srinath hasn't been here much at all. He's got much bigger fish to fry in India, and he hasn't been here most of the time trying to run the Neotel operation. So you're hearing a lot of rumors, and I think a lot of these sort of talk and stuff will come out of organizations because of the retrenchments, and a lot of people are unhappy, etc. But you know, where there's smoke, there's fire usually, and while specific allegations might not necessarily be true, I think generally Neotel is not performing as well as the market had expected, which is disappointing because I think in fixed lines, Telkom probably still needs some good competition.
Is there anything they could have done differently?
That's a good question. There's been a lot of suggestions that perhaps they shouldn't have chosen CDMA as their wireless broadband or their wireless technology for delivering services to consumers. I think they didn't anticipate the demand from some consumers for high bandwidth services, for data, for uncapped type services, which they offered initially, which really hit their network. And over the last couple of years, they've been trying to move those customers slowly off that network and onto their WiMAX network. I don't think they've been very clever in the way that they've approached the consumer market. I think they've made a number of promises which they haven't fulfilled. I think their customer service has been shocking from what I can gather from Neotel customers. I think in the consumer space, they've had some real challenges. It's more difficult to know in the corporate market. They say they're doing well there. They say they've got the big banks on as customers. In the wholesale market, I think they are doing well because they're providing access to facilities like the Easy Cable and the Seacom Cable. And they're going to be providing facilities to things like WAX from next year. And they've got access to a lot of fiber infrastructure in the ground, especially on a national basis. So I think that they're in the consumer space, they really haven't. And again, Ajay kind of played down the criticism of the consumer stuff, saying that they were never going to go big and it was always going to be a niche play for them. But I think they may be being a little bit disingenuous, because I think the consumer market has been a disappointment for the company and for the market generally.
Well, I mean, it doesn't seem like they've been able to decide whether to stick with the consumer market or whether to let it go. Last year, they came and went through for the consumer a couple of times, changing their mind about what they wanted. And I agree. I think the consumer market has been very disappointing for it. And I understood that Neotel's mandate was to service the consumer market as an alternative for Telkom. So they must have had some sort of target.
No, they did have a target, but their target wasn't based on signing up a certain number of subscribers. Their target was based on population coverage of their network. So they've built 400 CDMA base stations and they've met their target.
That makes sense.
Right. We're halfway through the show. I think it's a good time to take a break. We'll be back with you right after these messages.
Welcome aboard Voxair Teleconferencing, where you can enjoy first-class service at a fraction of the cost, without the wait or the jet lag. Just an automated, hassle-free way to connect with people wherever they are, and all the legroom you need. It's like being there without the hassle of getting there. So why travel for business when you can simply teleconference? Call 01-0001-0001 or visit voxair.co.za. Voxair Teleconferencing, from Vox.
After the advent of the telephone, it took mankind 70 years to invent the color television. And yet, it only took the next 23 years to invent lasers, the internet, to put a man on the moon. Ignition sequence start. It begs the question, what will the business world be like in the next 23 years? Wherever your business is at, Telkom Business will be there with you. Telkom Business.
Virtual Access, ECN's latest cost-saving telecom service. Virtual Access is a single 0860 number, providing your customers with national access to your company, no matter how many branches you have or where your customers are calling from. If you are currently using or plan to use an 0860 number, you need to talk to ECN. Virtual Access is the best price single national number offering in the market. For more, visit ecntelecoms.com. ECN. Lowering the cost of doing business.
Welcome back to Talk Central, the business technology podcast brought to you by the editors at techcentral.co.za. My name is Duncan McLeod. I'm here with Candace Jones. Candace, you've been following some legal issues around Telkom over the last couple of weeks. Now, Telkom obviously has such a long list of legal issues, it requires a big chunk of their annual report each year to set out. But they've won one important case recently. So tell us a little bit more about that.
Indeed. Telkom was facing a 1.7 billion rand legal suit from a company called Bihati, They were tendered, Telkom put out a tender in 2007 to do some network upgrades and roll out for the World Cup. And to cut a long story short, six bidders were shortlisted for this tender, one of them being this company, Vihati, which was trying to then finalize the agreements with Telkom, and that never happened. Vihati felt sidelined, felt like it had been pushed out of the process, and the tender actually never came to fruition. And last year, the company decided to take this to court to sue Telkom for the value of the deal, which it would have received, which was the 1.7 billion. The entire deal for all six bidders would have been about 2.7 billion. So the court case actually outlined quite a few and revealed quite a few details that were left out before in terms of Telkom's claim, because Telkom has always claimed that the tender validation period actually had expired before it had appointed a bidder, and that's why it was it had dropped the tender. So Telkom argued its case, and it seems to have won its case at the North Gauteng High Court. Vihati has not spoken to us just as of yet, and it's a pity because I'd really like to get there.
They were meeting with Telkom, though.
Yes, they were meeting with Telkom this week. I think they were supposed to have met on Wednesday regarding the deal.
Okay.
But it's unclear what they were discussing and why they were discussing anything, since Telkom actually won the case. So Bihati's payout towards its losses are going to be quite significant, because it actually put out the money to begin rolling out this tender, which it didn't win in the end. So it's I would like to chat to Bihati and find out exactly how they're feeling about the whole thing.
Certainly interesting development in Telkom's long list of legal battles, and I suppose that the company really needs every case it can win at the moment, given the challenges it's facing. But they've still got huge problems at the Competition Commission, which they're going to have to face down, plus a whole range of other legal battles, including this Telex battle that they're facing with
Putuma
Networks and Ed Scott, and there's a whole list of others that you can find in the contingent liabilities if you look on their investor relations website of the Telkom website, if you are that way inclined.
The two big issues are really the Competition Commission issues. Facing now at the Competition Tribunal, one from the former Vans, now all converted to full telecoms licensees, and another from Internet Solutions. Plus several other companies.
Yes.
Both of which have been referred to the tribunal with a 10% annual turnover fine.
They've been fighting that for a long time.
They have. I mean, that was last, not last year, the year, it was last year's big High Court ruling where Telkom and lost a High Court ruling to ICASA and the Competition Commission, where the High Court actually clarified whether the Competition Commission had a right to oversee competition issues at Telkom, where Telkom had argued before, and ICASA had the right.
No, the big operators always do that. They go to ICASA, they argue in front of ICASA that ICASA doesn't have the jurisdiction, that they have to go to the Competition Commission. They go to the Competition Commission, say to the Competition Commission, sorry, you don't have jurisdiction, we have to go to ICASA. So they try and escape the regulation entirely, and it doesn't always work, we've seen in this case.
The High Court case really put a stamp on that one, which was...
Well, they went to the Supreme Court of Appeal in Bloemfontein.
Yes. And the Supreme Court of Appeal, they lost there as well, yes. Sorry, that was the Supreme Court of Appeal case, which was...
It got thrown out in the High Court. There was a ruling against the Competition Commission at the High Court in Pretoria on a technicality, as far as I can recall. And then the Competition Commission took Telkom to court in the Supreme Court of Appeal, where Telkom lost. And now it's back at the Competition Tribunal, where they're going to be discussing this issue during the course of this year and possibly imposing a fine. Although it's never as much as 10% of revenue.
No, it shouldn't be, but it is the highest fine that the Competition Commission can
It always recommends 10% to the Commission, because that's the maximum it can recommend. I don't think there's been a case where it hasn't recommended less than 10%, and then the tribunal decides what quantum to impose. If Telkom is fined 10% of its annual turnover for the years of infraction, it's a very, very serious financial problem for them.
Definitely. Definitely, and I think that Telkom's lawyers are being paid overtime today. So they have a lot to face, and they have a lot to get through this year. As you say there, and your report that stems pages of these issues.
One person joked with me a couple of months ago that Telkom is just a law firm masquerading as a telecommunications operator. If they can win these battles, they're going to try their best in court. And they are a highly litigious company. I think they learned that from their former US shareholder, SBC Communications, now AT&T, which would sue anyone at the drop of a hat.
So it'll be interesting to watch these issues progress through this year. Yeah. And we'll definitely be keeping our fingers on them.
Good. Great. Well, we had a very interesting interview with the new CTO at MTN this week, and I've gone and left his business card in the other room because he's got this surname about this long, and I can't pronounce it without looking at it. But his first name is Lambo. Everyone calls him Lambo. I think it's Kagaratnam, if I'm getting it correct. He's taken over from Samir Dave, who was the former CTO at MTN South Africa. Interesting guy. And yes. We chatted to him in quite some detail about a new data center, 1,500 square meter data center that MTN is planning to build in Centurion, not far from the SA Mint, on just next to the N1 as you head towards Pretoria. Now, these data centers are going up, they're a dime a dozen these days. Standard Bank's putting up some colossus 1.6 billion rand facility just down the road from this new one. All the guys have put up facilities, BCX, Terraco, Neotel, they're all building data centers. What's really interesting about this data center is no ESCOM required.
Indeed. And it comes from a fantastic innovation which came out of MTN not too long ago, which is their tri-generation power plant, which they use on their campus. It's basically a gas power plant that they use, which has also got diesel generators and can use ESCOM electricity. Mm. But it powers quite a chunk. At the moment, 2 megawatts of the MTN Innovation Center, which is fantastic. And not only that, it uses once it's used the gas, the methane or natural gas, it uses the heat that gets created as a byproduct to push back into the air conditioning system that repowers the air conditioning system in the entire campus.
Now they're going to be doing the same thing at this data center facility, but just on a larger scale. Starting with 2 megawatts, but the plan eventually is to take this data center up to 12 megawatts, and the data center will be able to be completely powered with natural gas supplied by Sasol from Mozambique.
I think it's a 3.5 kilometer pipeline. That's gas line there.
It's an 800 kilometer pipeline that runs from the Mozambique coast to Gauteng, and the pipeline runs 3.8 kilometers from the facility of this new data center, or the site of this new data center. So MTN has commissioned Sasol to build a 3.8 kilometer pipeline from its existing extension of its existing pipeline to the Centurion site, in order to power the new data center. Now, it must be said this new data center isn't just going to run on natural gas. It's also going to connect to the ESCOM grid as a backup, and it's also going to have diesel generators on site. So it's also, as you call it, a tri-generation facility. But very, very interesting stuff. So if ESCOM goes down for 3 months, MTN's data center ain't going down.
Which is fantastic. I mean, I've had a tour of the one that's on the campus at the Innovation Center, and it is all chrome and bling and exceptional machinery that is massive and loud noises. It is absolutely impressive. And I really had fun actually looking around there. I must actually pick up those photos somewhere and plonk them onto our Facebook page.
Please do that, yes.
Because it was a fantastic tour and we really enjoyed that. So it's definitely going to, and it will be probably more impressive. As you say, 12 megawatts, it's going to be slightly bigger with a little bit more impressive machinery. So
it's going to be cool.
But what is MTN spending on this data center, though?
They're talking conservatively of about 100 million rand, up to about 150, 160 million rand as the facility expands. They said they're focusing very carefully on containment and cost management in the construction of this data center, right down to the type of concrete they're using in the paving and that sort of thing. But it is going to be one of the greenest data centers in Africa, and it's going to and MTN claims that they're the first telecommunications operator in Africa, and they say possibly in the world, I doubt that, but certainly in Africa, that has applied to receive carbon credits that they can trade. Very interesting indeed.
Definitely.
I'd be interested to know the Standard Bank data center across the road is going to cost about 16 times as much as the MTN data center. I'm still angling with my contacts at Standard Bank to get a tour of that one, because that must be something quite amazing.
That must be incredible. Mm. It must be massive. Mm. It's just mind-boggling. Mm. brain is already functioning.
Well, it's late on a Friday afternoon. But interesting, I was having a conversation with someone in the industry this week. I forget who it was now. He was saying to me that it's really interesting that these banks, like Standard Bank, go out and build their own data centers when the trend in the rest of the world is for them to share facilities and lease facilities, particularly from third-party data center providers. And he says his view was that it's almost like this kind of lager mentality that the banks grew up in South Africa. We've got to control the facilities. We've got to make them bomb-proof and put them in bunkers. And we've got to control. And you're almost seeing a similar sort of lager mentality coming out of Standard Bank with the construction of this 1.6 billion rand data center. It's ours. We're going to build it. It's going to be wonderful, but don't touch it. It's ours.
Yeah, no. it almost feels that way, doesn't it? Yeah. But it'll be fun for MTN to get something like that off the ground
because they had MTN's servers and hosting centers and all this sort of been scattered all over the place. I mean, yes. They've got that facility in Gallo Manor. They've got another one in Rosebank at the Avusa building. They've got some, I think, at the Innovation Center. They've got bits and pieces all over the place. So it'll be good to finally have something that they can sort of say, wow, there's our data center, check that out.
Yes.
Although I'm sure they will still keep the Rosebank site and all that sort of stuff.
From what I understand from the discussion that we had with MTN's new CTO was that this particular data center will be used to house most of its switching equipment.
Oh, it's going to be a transmission center as well for the MTN core network.
And primarily used for its own internal IT division.
I don't know if primarily this, but I don't know if it's going to be primarily for that. I think it's primarily going to be used as a data center, but it's also going to house their switching equipment and their transmission equipment for the core network, as well as their internal IT service. And then the rest will obviously be for MTN business and for guys wanting to use the service space. Yeah.
Fair enough.
While we're on the subject of MTN, and it's quite a different story. really surprised me, actually, given that MTN is so well known in particularly in soccer sponsorship, but also in cricket, that they're getting into the rugby game and muscling in on Vodacom's turf, and that in fact later this season we're going to be seeing the Vodacom Blue Bulls or the Vodacom Bulls playing the MTN Lions.
Indeed,
that could be very, very interesting indeed, and it's going to be interesting to see the chirps between the two sides.
It will be fun. Definitely mainstream media have been speculating over the last week, and MTN confirmed yesterday that they are definitely sponsoring the Golden Lions for a rugby union for all games that they play.
Now, this isn't just the Curry Cup team. This is the Curry Cup and the Super 14 and the Vodacom Cup. There's Vodacom again. The MTN Lions playing the Vodacom Bulls in the Vodacom Cup. Yeah.
Indeed. And I was supposed to tell you yesterday that you have been offered a lifetime box by MTN for any Lions game.
Oh, joy.
Duncan, for those who don't know, is a Sharks supporter.
I have a standing invitation, similar invitation from Rob Abram at Bytes Technology Group. But I'm afraid I am not a Lions supporter in any shape or form. In fact, I think I'd rather support the Border Bulldogs than the Lions. So... it's the Lions are going to be interesting to watch this year, though. As an avid rugby supporter, I've watched their performance over the last couple of years, and they really have been dismal. But last year they did start to turn the corner, and they started to improve in the Super 14, and then in the Curry Cup tournaments. And we've had Kajima's chairman
Robert Gumede,
thank you, in buying I think it's a 49.9% stake in Lions. Now, this is obviously one of the country's richest black businessmen. So there's some real interesting changes happening there. We've got two black-led businesses effectively investing
in the Lions
now, and by the rights they should be a powerful union because of the fact that they're headquartered in Johannesburg. The richest province, richest city in South Africa. They should have the resources to buy the players they need and do the development they need to, and bring in the coaching skill, etc. They need to turn this into a powerful franchise.
Well, from what I can tell, they've started to buy new players and started to do some development, which is great. So
there were rumors a while ago that they were trying to lure John Smith away from the Sharks, and there's been talk in the last couple of weeks that they're going to hire the Beast. Which would be a big blow for the Sharks.
Yes, it would. So, not that I'd mind, of course.
you're you used to be a Cat supporter.
I'm actually a Free State supporter.
You're a Cheetah supporter. That's all right.
But when I'm not in the Free State, then obviously the Lions are my thing.
Okay.
Having spent most of my life in Gauteng.
Okay.
And the rest of it in the Free State.
Yes, yes. But I had to have a laugh though. I see the Stormers are now being, or Western Province are now being, I think it's the Stormers, yeah, they're now being sponsored by DHL. And with chirps going around yesterday, can they deliver now? And how quickly can they do it?
Speaking of delivering, Duncan, yes. you had a very interesting interview this week on prices of mobile in Kenya.
Yes, I did. Yeah, that was really interesting. I chatted to Bob Collymore, who's the newly appointed CEO of Safaricom, and I was absolutely amazed how cheap it has become in Kenya to make a telephone call on a mobile phone. So just to give you some perspective here, an off-network call on Safaricom, which is one of the pricier operators in that market now, is 4 Kenyan shillings a minute. The exchange rate, I think, is around 10.50 or 11 to the rand. So divide that by around 10, let's call it 10. So you're looking, it's just under 40 South African cents a minute for an off-network call from the dominant operator in Kenya, Safaricom. Now, they cut their prices last August in reaction to price tariff cuts from Bharti Airtel, the big Indian operator that bought Zain last year for $10.7 billion. They appear to be using the Kenyan market as a testbed to see what cutting prices aggressively will do for market share. The Kenyan market is really interesting because Safaricom has about 75-80% of the mobile market there, with 3 other players who all have relatively tiny market share. Airtel has around 10% market share, although they've claimed that's gone up to 15% since they cut their prices. But they cut their prices sort of towards the middle of last year to 3 Kenyan shillings a minute, which is around 25 cents a minute. Safaricom reacted to that and cut its on-net prices to 3 Kenyan shillings a minute and 4 Kenyan shillings per minute off-net. Then just a couple of days ago, a couple of weeks ago, Airtel cut its prices again to 1 Kenyan shilling a minute for daytime calls on-net. 1 Kenyan shilling is 8.5 South African cents a minute. Remember, this isn't a fixed line call. This is a mobile call. It's on network. So just remember, you can't phone most of the Safaricom users. But 30% of users in that market carry dual SIM anyway. So they've probably got an Airtel SIM in their pocket and a Safaricom SIM in their pocket, so they can switch and mix and match when they need to. But the prices have dropped incredibly, and I just find it amazing that in South Africa we're talking prepaid rates of still up to 2.95 a minute, or 2.85 a minute. I mean, you can get lower rates now with these sort of incentives where they offer you discounts during certain times of the day when the network isn't so loaded. But it's so hard to actually figure out what the real tariff is.
Yes.
The fact is, if you're going to get a basic SIM card and make a prepaid phone call, you're going to pay as much as 2.85 a minute in South Africa. Something has to give here. Talking my sources. In the telecom space, so the prices in Africa are a fraction of what they are here, and the sort of view of the South African market is that the prices here are ludicrous. I'm starting to wonder whether there isn't going to be a price war erupting in the space soon, and perhaps triggered by someone like Cell C. Cell C has certainly been aggressive in the broadband market and come up with the best 3G data deals we've seen in this market by far so far.
Absolutely.
They haven't done anything on the voice side.
Not yet.
Why not? Is that their next step?
Is this not maybe what the kind of deal that they're not bargaining with Red Bull Mobile?
I can't see Lars doing it through
an MVNO. Alternative.
He'd want the market share. He'd want the PR.
Yes,
we're cutting all our rates to a random minute from now. You know, imagine that. Imagine the market share impact that we could have on Cell C.
Well, I would switch.
Yeah. I think a big chunk of the market would switch.
Of course,
MTN and Vodacom would then have to respond, even though it would hit their bottom line.
But they would have to. But it does seem like everywhere else in Africa has made such massive headway in both data and voice, where South Africa is still sort of stifled with high pricing.
Mm-hmm.
It might be a perception, but for me, if Cell C came in and cut a rand off my price every day for a phone call per minute, I'd take it.
Mm. Mm.
Even if it was on-net.
I wonder if that's their next move.
Could be.
It makes sense. I mean, we don't know their full strategy. I think we're constantly surprised at the things they're coming up with.
Yes.
I think they've got a clear vision of what they're trying to do over a 3 or 5 year period. And I think they do. I think they're playing their cards very close to their chest. But I think we're going to get a few more surprises out of Cell C before this before this price war is, well, before this whole situation has fully unfolded.
Indeed.
Interesting. It's going to be interesting to see if they do cut their tariffs on the voice side. It'll be interesting to see how Vodacom and MTN respond, because they haven't really responded on the data side, have they?
No, they haven't really.
They're still playing a wait and see game.
I think they are, but I think as soon as MTN and Vodacom start losing market share, then they will switch and they will start responding. So perhaps they haven't actually lost the market share yet, or perhaps people are just buying both.
Could be, it could be.
I have both. Mm. I have a Cell C data card and I have a Vodacom.
That's true.
Mobile phone.
Mm. That's true. Yeah, I mean, I load a bundle on my Vodacom SIM card every month for my smartphone. Choose through. I think I've got a 1 gig bundle on there now, just for my phone. And I use Cell C as well. I use MTN here and there. I use Vodacom data sticks. In fact, I use everybody. I'm on Telkom. I've got about 5 ADSL accounts. I get bandwidth where I can.
Oh, but we also have to test them. So we end up with the accounts and we
use them. So, that's true.
Interesting to see. Perhaps it's worth looking out for.
Before we call it a day, though, I just wanted to, while we're on the subject of Cell C and sports, they're also doing something in that space, aren't they? A cycling sponsorship. What are they up to?
It's an inaugural event. It is the Tour of South Africa cycling event, which...
This sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, it's almost a mimic of the Tour de France, but a 1,200-kilometer race from Pretoria to Paarl.
Over how many days?
7 days. There's 7 legs, and you don't actually have to cycle from Pretoria to Paarl. Which is
you don't.
No. There are some legs of the race which do around so from Monte Cassino through all the way around to the Soccer City and then coming back again to Monte Cassino. Paarl also has a similar route. So these are legs and you win each leg.
Oh, so you drive to the start of the leg and then do the leg.
But it's
not really like the Tour de France where you actually do the entire route.
Well, they do a route, but it's not as intense as the Tour de France. But it seems like...
Because it would have been quite interesting to watch all these cyclists cycling through that route between Porfader and Uppington in the middle of summer.
That sounds mean, Duncan.
I was there in September, and the heat in September, I mean, without even the full sunshine, it was just unbelievable.
Wow.
Gets into the 50s there.
Just briefly, Cell C is the first national sponsorship that Cell C is entering into terms sports. Of sports.
Yeah, we haven't really seen them associated with sports in the past.
They have done community things.
They sponsored tennis, didn't they?
They sponsored community. I can't remember.
Could have been MTN.
They sponsor community drives, and they've done a lot of community work and community sponsorships, but I've never seen them do a national sports sponsorship before. And obviously this is a very exciting time for Cell C, you know, having their national rollout of the network, having their, you know, big marketing campaign, and coming in now with yes, cycling is not as exciting as rugby or soccer, although that's not entirely true. I mean, I've met some very hardcore cycling fans.
There are a lot of cyclists in this country, yeah.
And there are a lot of cycling events in the country which are very well attended. Mm. So it should be very exciting. So if you've got plans, you've got a bicycle, you want to do this, I think now's the time to start training.
That sounds pretty cool. So when is it happening? This year?
Yes, I assume so.
Sometime this year.
I've actually forgotten the date. Something that I will check.
Okay, cool. Cool. Well, we'll post that in the notes alongside the podcast. Yeah, yeah. Well, I think Candice, it's the end of Friday, so let's call it there. Thanks again for watching the show. We are hoping to get more guests on the show in future episodes. We're hoping to get industry executives in here around the table to talk about some of the big issues. So, if you've got any suggestions of guests you'd like to see on the show, please drop us an email at info@techcentral.co.za. Until next time, thanks for listening, and we'll see you then. Thanks. Bye.